because that would make my week. Although several inches taller than Ruby, James lacked the commanding presence of his father. Ruby took a strengthening breath of city air before relaying the recent murders, which held all the hallmarks of his father's case. "We're concerned someone's emulating your father, but it appears to be a person with an intimate knowledge of his case. I was wondering if anyone had spoken to you about it recently." "Oh, yeah, sure," James said, his lip arched in a sneer. "I love talking about my darling dad to the press." He twisted his forefinger around his index finger in a gesture of friendship. "We're like that, we are. I love journalists." Ruby arched an eyebrow as she gave him a withering glare. "The press made our lives hell for years. My poor mum had to move away because they wouldn't stop knocking on our door. The endless phone calls, being stopped in the street. Why would I want anything to do with those blood-sucking vampires?" "What about online forums?" Luddy said. "Social media? Facebook?" A crackle of laughter escaped James's lips. He stared at Luddy with humorless eyes. "Yeah, because I'm so proud to be the son of a serial killer. It's great for my pulling power. You just roll that out as a chat-up line, and all the lads want to know you. You've no idea how much my family has gone through, because if you did..." He raised a finger to interrupt Ruby, who opened her mouth to speak. "If you did," he said, tears springing to his eyes, "you would not come here and so casually start raking things up again. Those women weren't the only ones wounded. We all suffered because of what he did." His hands trembling, he took a breath, the blood draining from his face. Ruby wondered if such hatred could fuel a passion that could drive him to do terrible things as well. "I'm sorry," she said. "I didn't mean to upset you. But whoever it is seems to know an awful lot about his case. We need to find out who's been sharing information. Women's lives are at risk." James sniffed, wiping the tears from his eyes. "Look, I know you're only doing your job, but I can't help you. I've been through years of therapy to get where I am now. I've got a steady life, my own business." He looked from Luddy to Ruby, a look of horror dawning on his face. "You think it's me, don't you? You actually think I've been walking in his shoes?"
"I never said that," Ruby replied. "But as investigators, we have to explore all avenues. Perhaps it would be better if we spoke about this at the station in a voluntary interview."
"If you want me to come to the police station, you'll have to arrest me first," James spat, his face inches away from Ruby as he spoke. Ruby stood her ground, noting his clenched fists by his side.
"There's no need for aggression," she said calmly, giving Luddy a look to say that she was okay. Stepping back, James raised his hands in the air and slapped them against his legs.
"Do you see? See what he's doing to me? I'm not normally like this."
The heat left his words as he spoke, and he seemed to be slowly coming back to ground. Turning his back, he plucked a small brown plastic container of tablets from his pocket and, tipping two onto his palm, swallowed them dry. Briefly closing his eyes, his lips moved as he silently counted backwards from 5 to 1.
"In answer to your question, I've not spoken to my father recently. The last time I tried was 5 years ago, when my therapist suggested we meet."
"How did it go?" Luddy said, watching him intently for any sudden moves.
"It didn't. He disowned me years ago because of my life choices. I'm gay. Therefore, I disgust him."
James smiled, bitterness lacing his words.
"After everything he's done, I disgust him."
He looked from Luddy to Ruby.
And now I'm done with the whole thing. Please don't contact me again, not unless it's to tell me he's dead.
James, wait, Ruby said, reaching out as he turned away. Isn't there anyone you could think of that might have in-depth knowledge of your father? Anyone at all?
James turned to face her, pulling back his arm from her touch.
Yes, there is actually. One very irritating woman who refuses to go away. I'm beginning to think I'm speaking a different language because she keeps asking me the same question over and over again. I've tried telling her the truth, but she won't leave me alone.
Devoid of words, Ruby sighed.
Who? Luddy asked, reaching for his pocket notebook and pen as James walked away.
Me, Ruby said flatly. He's talking about me.
Hands in pockets, Luddy turned towards the station entrance.
We'd better get our tube.
Deep in thought, Ruby entered the bowels of the station, her attention drawn to the huge flashing screens overhead. Advertisements, movie trailers, all were shown in their colourful glory. Ruby paused. A rock in a sea of bustling commuters, she stared up at the screens.
CCTV. She spoke the words on an exhale. Cameras cover every angle of this place. I want you to seize all footage of James's comings and goings at around the time of Cheryl's death.
But we haven't pinpointed the time, Luddy said, raising his eyebrows at the mammoth task ahead.
We have, or at least close enough, Ruby said, the presence of the screens triggering a finite detail she had missed out on when she read the statements the first time around.
The hotel they found her in, the Grand. The maid said the television was on when she got there, most likely to drown out any noise.
Yes, and? Luddy said, confusion crossing his face.
I'll bet money that it's on a timer. 2, maybe 4 hours before it switches off by itself. Which means the killer was there not long before the body was found.
So pinpoint the time and see if James was working that day, Luddy replied.
Ruby nodded in agreement. And if he's not, we've got enough suspicion to bring him in.
Chapter 42.
Since when did you own a car? Ruby said, looking pointedly at the keys her daughter had placed on the glossy kitchen counter. Ruby pulled down 2 mugs from the overhead cupboard as she made the first cuppa of the morning.
Frances bought it for me. I think she's worried that it'll take me too long to get to Chigwell by public transport, and I might not come back.
Bribery's one way around it, I suppose, Ruby said, regretting the words as soon as they had left her lips. Kathy looked pointedly around the luxury Dalston flat.
I guess none of us are shy when it comes to accepting gifts from the Crosbys.
Ruby took a breath and prepared to start again. The last thing she wanted was their first weekend together getting off on a bad foot. Not that she would be there very much, given her team's caseload. She'd barely had time for breakfast before going to work.
Coffee? Ruby said, taking the milk from the fridge.
I'd much prefer tea, Kathy replied. Strong, 3 sugars. What are you grinning at?
Nothing, Ruby replied, biting back her smile. It's just, that's how I like it too.
Good, Kathy said. It means you won't be lecturing me about my sugar intake like Nana.
Nana? Ruby laughed. How do you get away with calling her that? Frances may have been Kathy's grandmother, but she would hardly appreciate the reference.
I only use it when she's getting on my nerves. She hates being reminded of her age. It's one way of getting her off my back.
Walking into the living room, Ruby rested their tea on the coffee table.
It's really nice to have you here, she said. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better.
I'd like that too, Kathy said,
kicking off her boots before curling up on the sofa.
And I'm not going to sponge off the family forever. I'm going to get a good job, start paying my way.
Ruby smiled gently, taking a seat next to her.
Hun, I think you're entitled to some payback, given all the years you were away. I know it wasn't easy for you, and I'm sorry. I wish things had turned out differently.
You want to know about the scars, don't you? Kathy said, staring into her cup.
I've caught you looking at them enough times.
Only when you're good and ready, Ruby said, steeling herself for her daughter's reply.
I've spent half my life thinking like a victim, Kathy said. It's time to move on. I don't blame you for giving me up. I probably would have done the same thing at that age.
Ruby stared, speechless, at her change of heart.
When did you come to this decision?
Dad talked me through the old thing. It's okay, I get it.
I'd like to begin again.
And your past? Ruby asked.
Would you like to talk to someone about it?
If not me, then maybe we could arrange for...
counseling, Kathy said, preempting her words.
No, thanks.
I'm putting a lid on it. My scars are part of me now.
They've made me strong.
I'm going to get a tattoo. Incorporate them in. It'll be tastefully done. Nobody will know they're there, except for me.
And your boyfriend? Ruby paused to sip her tea, swallowing back her regret. She had believed in the system when she gave her daughter up, and it had let them both down.
You know, I think he's more in love with you than me.
Kathy grinned, her eyes twinkling at the mention of his name.
Look, Mum, can I call you Mum?
I'd love you to, Ruby said, feeling warmth spread like a fire inside her.
I'll tell you what happened, but I need you to let it lie. Don't go poking your nose in. Do you promise?
Ruby nodded silently by means of reply. A flicker of fear rose up inside her as she braced herself for what was to come. Was she ready to hear this? Kathy cleared her throat.
I was in and out of foster homes until the Connor family took me in at the age of 10. Peter, the head of the household, was big into corporal punishment and took his belt to me more than once. I took punishments for the other foster kids because I couldn't bear to see them suffer too. He said nobody would believe us if we told the truth. So when I was 13, I fought back.
No, Ruby said, her hands slowly cupping her mouth. Kathy shifted in her seat as she prepared to relay the rest of the story.
One day, Peter made me kneel in the corner of the garage. I stayed silent as he beat me across the back with his belt. Then he said he was going to administer a special punishment. I saw how he'd been looking at me, and something told me there was something far worse coming my way. I acted all meek, but he underestimated me. When he turned to lock the garage door, I picked up a shovel and whacked him over the head.
She grinned at the memory, but Ruby did not share in her glee. Her eyes wet with tears, she placed her cup on the table before taking her daughter's hand.
That's horrific, she said. I'm so sorry.
It's not your fault, Kathy interrupted, briefly squeezing her hand.
What happened? Did you get help?
Ruby's stomach churned as she contemplated the pain her daughter had been through.
I told the police it was self-defense. They couldn't argue with the scars on my back, all courtesy of his thick leather trouser belt, buckle side up.
She sighed as she recalled the memory, the smile stiff on her face.
We got help. The other kids found new homes. But I didn't get on anywhere after that. When I was old enough, I got a flat. But I wasn't what you'd call responsible. I didn't cope very well on my own.
I knew things were tough when you found us, Ruby said quietly. Kathy did not disagree.
I fell in with a bad crowd, got into drugs, slept with people I shouldn't have. I'm one of the lucky ones. I got out in time. Others, they weren't so fortunate. I dread to think how some of them ended up. Dead, probably. You're so strong, coming out the other side. Dad said I get that from you. From what I've seen, you're both pretty ballsy. But I don't want to think about the past anymore. It's time to move on. You know I'll support you in whatever you want to do. Kathy's expression lightened as they moved on to a brighter subject. Good, because I've been studying law.
Really? Ruby said. Joining the dark side?
No, I'm joining the police.
Ruby stared, wordless and expressionless, as she absorbed her daughter's words.
Well, say something, Kathy said.
When you said law, I presumed you were talking about becoming a criminal defense lawyer, Ruby replied. Isn't that what your dad thinks you're going to do?
Yeah, Kathy smirked. He thinks I'm going to get some of his old cronies off when I'm qualified. I was hardly going to tell him the truth, was I? Not while I'm living with Frances. You know how much she hates the old Bill. She'd do her nut.
She will, Ruby grimaced at the thought.
And you know who she'll blame?
Me.
Since when have you been afraid of Frances Crosby? Kathy said.
Ruby smiled. Her daughter had gotten to know her well. Swigging back the dregs of her tea, Kathy lay her cup on her lap, placed her feet on the coffee table, and turned to face her mum.
I thought you'd be pleased.
Ruby exhaled a deep sigh.
After all you've been through, I just wanted you to have an easier life. What's made you want to join the job? I always thought you disapproved.
I only said that stuff to get back at you, Kathy said. I didn't mean a word. If anything, I admire what you do.
And what about your dad? Ruby said earnestly.
Do you admire that side of the business?
He's trying to clean up his act. Seriously, you want to hear the rows Lenny has with him over the phone? He's sold off half the businesses, and after those prostitutes got killed, he's closed down the escort site too.
Ruby tried not to act surprised. She knew Nathan had been affected by the murders of the girls who had once worked on his patch, but she was not made aware of this most recent development in things. Was Nathan Crosby finally going straight? He had always managed to evade being charged for his crimes. There was still time for him to turn things around.
That's good to hear, she said. I'll support you if you can give me a good enough reason as to why you want to join the police.
Kathy's focus turned inwards as she retrieved long-buried memories.
When I turned the tables on my foster father and gave him a taste of his own medicine, it made me feel like I was worthwhile. One of the other foster kids was called Fiona. She was Down syndrome. She couldn't fight back. I had to make it so he could never hurt anyone again.
How did you do that? Ruby said.
Peter came to punish Fiona that day, not me. I wouldn't let him take her away. So I wound him up really bad. He forgot all about her and chose to teach me a lesson instead.
That's awful, Ruby said.
Nah, it was good, because this time I had scars. I'd already planned my escape. Without a proper beating, it would have been my word against his. Social care knew I couldn't have whipped my own back. They found the belt in the garage. It still had traces of my blood on it. It was thanks to the police and my testimony that he was locked away for what he did.
And Fiona?
She was adopted. A sweet kid. I often think about her now.
A sudden thought shot across Ruby's consciousness.
Does your dad know about this?
No,
Kathy said, shaking her head. And you can't let him know. He'd find him and string him up by the balls.
I thought you'd welcome it, Ruby said, prizing more information from her.
Once I would have, but not any more. Seeing Lenny in action is enough to put me off.
Ruby frowned.
What have you seen?
Kathy tapped her finger to the side of her nose.
Nothing for you to worry about.
God, you remind me of your father, Ruby said, making a mental note to find out later.
I'll take that as a compliment, Kathy replied. Don't worry, it works both ways. I don't report anything I hear from you either.
What have you heard? Ruby said, wishing she could stay and chat a little longer.
Oh, just that Dad's arranged for you to speak to Mason Gatley. Or rather, Lenny has.
Made up he was.
But I think you need to be careful there. I know he's my uncle, but I don't trust him an inch.
I'm glad you have the measure of him, Ruby said, because he knew exactly who you were when he took you on in the club, long before he told your father.
I know, and I've spoken to him about it. He said it wasn't his place to say.
Ruby frowned, reminding herself to keep things light.
Well, you don't need to be getting involved in police business. Leave that to me.
Kathy cocked her head to one side.
I know who this Mason Gatley is. The lonely arts killer, right? If you need any help finding his copycat, then I'm happy to get stuck in.
Ruby paled at the thought.
You're joking me, right?
It was just an offer,
Kathy said, picking up the cups to bring them to the sink.
Word has it that he's been hitting the clubs.
The thought of her daughter getting involved in her case sent a cold shiver down her spine. She checked her watch, preparing to put this conversation to the back of her mind. Now was time to focus on leading her team, but not before she issued a warning to her daughter. No involvement. Nothing. Do you hear me? She said in a stern voice.
Your face!
Kathy laughed, flicking her head back as her dark hair tumbled into her face.
Chill your beans, I was joking. Besides, he only goes for married chicks.
Ruby pulled on her blazer, frustration spearing her words. We'll talk about this later.
Promise me you won't have anything to do with this case. Relax. All I've planned for tonight is a hot chocolate and a chick flick on the box.
But Ruby was not convinced. The sooner she got this killer off the streets, the sooner they would all be safe.
Chapter 43. Pressing her palms against the interview room door, Ruby took a moment to pause. She had barely reached her office before being notified of another missing person case. The speed at which the killer was working was frightening. First Melissa, then Cheryl. Was there a third victim already? Yesterday's conversation with Mason's son, James, had left her unsettled. With just 4 hours' sleep under her belt, she felt barely able to face the world again. Pressing down firmly on the door handle, she gathered up all of her strength to deal with what lay ahead. Lisa Crawley's missing person report had been fast-tracked as soon as she mentioned a photograph of her husband had arrived at her home. Slid through the letterbox of the three-bedroom semi, it was met with confusion by his wife. From postal workers to couriers, the choice of delivery seemed random each time. To them, they were simply doing their job. They had no idea of the devastation they were delivering as they walked around from door to door. Ruby wondered how many more people were getting photographs of their partners. Were there more unreported crimes? One thing at a time, she told herself. It was a mantra she used when she began to feel overwhelmed. Dressed in yesterday's trouser suit, her hair straggling from her ponytail, it was most certainly the case today. The briefing room was filled with inquiries. Crime scene pictures, maps, suspects, theories, and that was just on one board. She had no doubt that the discovery of the body of Matthew Johnson had meant the perpetrator had taken over his role. Filling his shoes, he had taken his online profile as his own. Keeping a neutral expression, Ruby introduced herself to Lisa.
She was an attractive woman with a pixie nose and cropped, mousy brown hair. In her early 40s, she had described herself as happily married when asked by attending officers, and Ruby wondered if she knew her husband had an interest in men. Pleasantries over, Ruby launched into her line of questioning. She could have asked a detective constable to get the measure of her, but Ruby wanted to see for herself. "You told the officers your husband was expected home yesterday but didn't return home. Is that right? Has he ever done anything like this before?" She was aware she was trawling over the same questions she had asked Cheryl's husband not long before. Lisa sat with her fingers intertwined, her knuckles white from the effort.
"Thomas is very punctual. If he says he's going to be somewhere at a certain time, then he'll be there. He sent me a text at 5 o'clock to say he was going to some meeting after work and would be home by 9 that night. Even that's unlike him. He doesn't text because he's never late."
She gave Ruby a weak smile.
"His father was in the army, you see. Thomas grew up in a regimented way of life. This is so out of character for him."
"Have you any idea as to where he might be?" Ruby said. Tears brimmed Lisa's eyes as she shook her head from left to right.
"When I told my friends he didn't come home, they just smiled at me, saying he was probably out on the prowl. But Thomas isn't like their husbands. He's not interested in other women. He doesn't get drunk and, no matter what happens, he always finds his way home."
"When you say he isn't interested in other women, what do you mean by that?" Ruby said, finding an opening and using it. Lisa released her fingers and began dry washing her hands, as if wanting to cleanse herself of Ruby's words.
"Nothing," she said sharply. "He's a one-woman man. That's all I meant."
"What about men?" Ruby said, gauging her reaction.
"I beg your pardon," Lisa replied, her features creased in a frown.
Oh well, in for a penny, in for a pound, Ruby thought, no stranger to rubbing people up the wrong way. She could not sugarcoat it. She did not have the time.
"Has he ever been sexually attracted to men?" "Of course not. What does that have to do with him being missing? Have you got the right to ask me questions like these?"
"Sometimes," Ruby said, "if it pertains to the investigation. Please, Lisa, it's important. Has Thomas ever dated another man?"
"What relevance has that got to him not coming home?" Lisa asked.
Ruby exhaled. "There's a line of inquiry in a similar case that we're following, but I can't give you any details at this stage. The photo you've been sent is significant, and I need you to cooperate with us because there's a chance more pictures may be sent to your home." Ruby watched Lisa's face crumple as she spoke.
"What do you mean, more? Is Thomas in trouble?"
She began to nibble on a jagged thumbnail, and Ruby noticed it had been bitten to the quick. "Can you answer my question, please? About his previous relationships. I promise I'll be discreet," Ruby said firmly. Lisa returned to wringing her hands, her legs crossed beneath the table. It was like every inch of her was tying itself up in knots.
"Once, he told me that when he was 18, he had a crush on his supervisor. Michael, I think his name was. They both knew about it, but it didn't go any further. People experiment at that age. It was nothing. He's not looked at another man since."
Ruby nodded, fighting the rising internal sense of dread. She could see it all in front of her. Thomas fulfilling his fantasies with a one-night stand, flirting at a party, a card being slipped into his hand. Debauchery. She could only hope that his wife avoided reading the stories bound to filter into the press.
"What do I do now?"
Lisa sniffed, her words dissolving into a whine.
"Please,
Is he in some kind of danger? Why can't you tell me any more? How am I meant to go home after this? What will I tell my kids?
Ruby reached out and lightly patted Lisa's hand. Her wedding ring glinted from beneath the strip lights. It carried a design, and Ruby hated herself for wondering if Thomas had a matching band. She tried not to allow it in, but the image came just the same, a thick gold engraved band dangling from a chain. "Don't panic just yet," Ruby said, grateful Lisa could not read her thoughts. "Your husband's disappearance may not be connected to our other case. You might go home and find him sitting there, wondering what all the fuss is about." A gloom descended on the room. Given the presence of the photo, Ruby knew this was unlikely to be the case. "All I'm asking is that you don't open any post over the next couple of days. We'll assign someone to come to your home and open it on your behalf, just in case there's any more photos. Oh, and Lisa, can you tell me, is your husband a member of a golf club?"
"Golf club?" Lisa said. "No, I told you we don't really go out. He lives for his work."
"So he's never been to the Highfield Country Club, then?" Lisa frowned.
"No, wait. That name rings a bell. He's an airline pilot. They had a work stew there recently. I had a migraine, so Thomas went on his own. It was an awards ceremony. He was nominated, so he couldn't wriggle out of it."
"Why? What's that got to do with it?"
"Nothing at this point," Ruby said, wishing she could tell her more. But after Warrow's recent outburst on information sharing, it was too great a risk to take. "It's only been a day. Your case is being given priority. Most missing people return home safe and well." Ruby's reassurances seemed to have done the trick at least enough for her to calm Lisa down.
"I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so snappy. I know you're trying your best. My brother's a police officer in Suffolk. He's told me how hard you all have it at the moment. It's the same on the NHS."
The briefest of smiles passed her lips.
"I used to be a nurse, but by the time I paid the childminder, it wasn't worth going to work. It's a shame because I loved what I did."
"It's definitely a labor of love," Ruby said, conscious of the time as she rose from her seat. More than ever, she wanted to reunite this woman with her husband. "Officers will need to seize any laptops or computers your husband had access to. Again, it's just a measure of precaution. Is that okay with you?" Lisa's shoulders slumped as she met Ruby's gaze.
"It will have to be, won't it? I'll do anything to get him home."
Chapter 44. "Back so soon?" Mason said, in a voice that somehow suggested they were friends. "Couldn't you stay away? Or are you admitting yourself as an inpatient and have come to say hello?"
He sat at the table in his normal manner, his long legs sprawled underneath. Ruby edged her crossed legs beneath her wooden chair, physically distancing herself from his presence. She buttoned her jacket as a sliver of cold air made goosebumps rise on her skin. The room seemed gloomier today, and a creeping sense of menace infiltrated Ruby's senses. In the corner, Norman stood, keeping a watchful eye. It was a repetitive loop as far as Ruby was concerned, and her frustration was evident in her tone. "I'm in no mood for games. We've had another missing person reported, all thanks to you." Ruby delivered a hard stare. She had not expected a return visit to the psychiatric unit, but in the absence of any firm leads, DCI Warrow had instructed her to go.
"Really, officer? I'm offended," Mason said, clearly animated by her presence. "The bloodlust was there to begin with. I merely provided the inspiration. How many people have you inspired today?"
"You can shove your inspiration where the sun doesn't shine," Ruby said, her eyes darting to Norman,
who was standing by the door. It was taking time to obtain Mason's full medical records. All Ruby knew was that he was admitted due to what was termed a psychotic attack and a threat to self-harm. She did not doubt the man had problems, but she could not help but feel he was putting on his recent illness. Her team was still speaking to people likely to come into contact with him. It was quicker to come and see for herself.
So, I take it my elusive impersonator is still on the loose?
Mason's lips curled in a smile.
After me working so hard to give you a clue, you failed to decipher.
You're wasting my time, Ruby quipped. I'm only here because my DCI wanted me to appeal to your better nature. I've told her you don't have one, which is why I'm not staying long.
Such a shame, Mason said. I've come to look forward to our little visits.
Ruby swallowed. She could physically taste her dislike for this man as sourness on her tongue. I can see that. You set all this up solely for your own amusement.
My hands are clean. No blood here.
Mason raised his palms.
As much as I'd like to, I can't take the credit for the murders.
He raised his eyebrows and emitted a short chuckle.
Or can I?
Ruby's pulse raced as he teased her with the answers, but she tried hard to hide the turmoil she felt inside. Enough with the games. If you won't tell me who's responsible, then at least tell me where victim number three is. Rubbing his chin, Mason appeared to mull it over.
I could, but you have to do something for me first.
I don't trade with killers, Ruby said, deadpan.
You do when it suits you. You forget. I know all about your relationship with Nathan Crosby. What's wrong? Is this victim not special enough for you to bend the rules? I was only asking for a phone call. Does she deserve everything she gets?
She, Ruby thought, a light bulb moment flicking on in her brain. If Thomas really is the next victim, then Mason doesn't know. An idea turned over in her head. It would be risky and involved bluffing to some extent. But what did she have to lose? She bit her lip as she thought it over. Mason appeared far too calm. She needed to inject some emotion into the proceedings first. We don't all share your way of thinking, Ruby said, conveying an expression of disgust as she eyed him up and down. You swagger around like you're some kind of celebrity, whereas all you are is a pathetic loser who gets your rocks off from watching other people do what you can't. Mason jumped forward, grabbing Ruby by both wrists. Shocked by the sudden contact of his cold flesh, Ruby untangled her crossed legs and jerked back in her chair.
You cheeky bitch!
Mason snarled, spittle landing on her face.
When I get out of here, I'm gonna skin you alive!
That's enough now!
The man at the door shouted, striding towards them. Ruby shook her wrists, as if to discard his DNA from her skin. It's okay, she said, speaking with more confidence than she felt. Mason's eyes had bored through her as he made his threat, revealing every ounce of hatred he felt inside. She knew all the light banter, compliments and niceties were only skimming the surface. His real personality lay beneath. Personality that housed a monster. It was a timely reminder of the sort of man she was dealing with, but she could not afford to stop now. She was glad she had invoked a reaction, because now the real work could begin. Norman Jennings stood over them, looking to Ruby for reassurance. She knew everything about this member of staff after Mason had mentioned him previously. He had come up clean after a thorough check. All the same, she found her eyes falling on his neckline, looking for the telltale bump of wedding rings on a chain beneath his clothes. Mason raised his hands in mock submission, his earlier smile returning to his face.
Sorry, I got a little carried away. I'll behave myself from now on. I promise.
He gave Norman a winning smile, but neither of them were fooled. Ruby nodded that she was okay, and, reluctantly, Norman took 3 steps back.
So, Ruby said, keeping her tone light. Whatever you want, I'm not giving you any more. Just remember that, without me, you'll have no knowledge of the damage these murders are causing your reputation. It does make me wonder, though, why did the killer make a variation to the routine this time? What does he know about you that we don't?
What deviation? Mason said, his interest restored.
Yes, it's strange, that one, Ruby responded, preparing to deliver her bluff. You see, I always thought your murders were sexually motivated, because you raped your victims and masturbated while you were there. But with the current victims, there's no evidence to suggest the killer has been sexually active in any way. At first, we thought it was down to lack of evidence. Like you, our suspect found these women attractive and that's why he chose to do what he did. But now it seems that there's a bigger picture.
Ruby crossed her ankles beneath the table. It's all slotting together now. We found semen at the crime scene. We have DNA.
You just said he wasn't sexually active, Mason said, narrowing his eyes.
He wasn't, except for this one victim, Ruby replied.
Mason shrugged.
So? It won't be any value to you unless he's already on your system. And if you knew who it was, you wouldn't be visiting me.
True, Ruby said. But what was it about this particular person that turned him on? Made him so overcome that he forgot himself.
Mason's eyes narrowed. You could almost see the cogs in his mind turning as he tried to work out just what she was getting at. Reminding herself of who she was dealing with, Ruby slowly straightened her posture. It would not do to be caught off guard should Mason rise up again. She sighed.
It makes me wonder if he's delivering a message about you.
So he wanked off. Big deal, Mason said.
Ruby prepared to deliver the bombshell. I'm not the only one unable to work out clues. Don't you see? This one was different. The victim wasn't a woman. It was a man. In fact, it was the man he killed, so he could take his place. The one from the dating agency, Debauchery. Very handsome, by all accounts, too. The darkness returned to Mason's face as the implication of her words became clear.
Funny, isn't it? It's like he's getting back at women by murdering them. Maybe he hates them full stop, but men... That's where his real fantasies lie. Is he trying to tell us the same thing about you?
The comment about finding semen was a lie. Ruby could not care less about Mason or Matthew's sexuality. But what she did care about was making Mason mad. His breathing was elevated now, the color rising from his neck to his cheeks like a temperature gauge. He clenched his teeth. But yet Ruby continued to speak.
You see, the thing is that everything Mason does... Oh, sorry, I meant Matthew. It's easy to get you two mixed up these days.
Mason's body tensed, and the man at the door took a step forward. Ruby continued.
Everything he does reflects on you. It's certainly going to provoke a great debate in the media. That's if we don't catch him in time.
You've got it wrong, Mason said. This is bullshit. He wouldn't deviate from the plan like this.
Don't take my word for it, Ruby said. If we don't catch him soon, you'll be able to read about it for yourself. And yes, we could have got it wrong. The man who was murdered could have been seeing someone else. But you know what proves it? What really leaves me in no doubt that your impersonator is gay?
Mason sat back in his chair and folded his arms. His biceps strained against his sleeves as they tensed.
It's that victim number 3 isn't a woman. It's a man, Ruby continued, forthright in tone. So I think it's time you revise the idea of helping us out.
Chapter 45 Ruby paced the hospital corridor as she waited to be allowed in. Her stomach was tied up in knots, her body still trembling from the comedown of adrenaline flowing through her veins. Units had raced to find Thomas at the hotel Mason disclosed. It had proved one of 2 things. Mason knew the killer's next move, and he cared enough about his reputation to want to stop him dead. Thomas was not just alive, but conscious. Although dehydrated, his fingers were still intact, and officers had reached him with time to spare. With the hotel room under constant surveillance, Ruby prayed the killer would return. She could have arrested Mason for the offense of assisting him in his crimes. But like a game of Jenga, that would send their carefully constructed relationship tumbling down. He was on the precipice of giving her the killer's identity. An arrest at this time would serve to shut him up. She tried to imagine the killer returning to the hotel room and discovering a police officer in Thomas's place. Would he be caught just as Mason was before? She had lied to Mason. No semen had been found. She smiled, barely able to believe that he had fallen into her trap. Her visits to the prison had been worthwhile, and she had Nathan to thank for getting her a foot in the door. But now she had made Mason's acquaintance. She knew he would not let it go. She had seen the hatred in his eyes, felt the firmness of his fingers as they dug into her skin. Downs's honeyed voice carried in the air as he sweet-talked his friend, the ward sister, into letting them into Thomas's hospital room. Ruby watched as she tilted her head to one side, her eyes twinkling in response to the lilt of his Northern Irish accent. Ruby looked away as a tiny pang of jealousy bloomed. She still had feelings for him, even now. What they had was more than friendship, and she supposed that it would never go away. In truth, she did not want him to retire because she did not want him to go. The future felt uncertain, and she hated it. Why couldn't things stay the way they were? Ambling towards her, Downs wore a satisfied grin. We can visit for a few minutes. He's traumatized and tired, but should be all right to speak. Let me do the talking, he said, his hand gently resting on Ruby's back as he followed her into the room. Rank was meant to take precedence, but sometimes Ruby forgot. To her, it was about the best way to get the job done. She dreaded to think who would be her senior officer once Downs had left. Unless she took the post herself. She pushed such thoughts aside as they entered the private room, grateful his wife had gone home to bring him in a change of clothes. A weary man, he lay back on the bed, his expression still carrying fragments of the horrors of his ordeal. Pressing a button, he elevated the bed. He winced as he made himself comfortable. The rope burns on his wrists and neck covered by a thin, transparent gauze. Ruby thought of his wife and wondered what she was going through. Yes, he would have some explaining to do, but surely she would be happy just to have him in one piece. Ruby reminded herself that it was not for her to contemplate how his marriage was going to survive. She was here to glean as much information as she could. Memories of Melissa's autopsy came back to haunt her. Now Cheryl was due on the mortuary slab. It was good to see Thomas pink-skinned and alive. Taking out her notebook and pen, she prepared to take notes as Downs introduced them both. But Thomas seemed keen to get something off his chest.
"You're the officers that saved me," he croaked, his voice hoarse.
"Yes," Downs replied, giving Ruby a sideways nod. "Sergeant Preston here was instrumental in finding your hotel room in time." Thomas nodded solemnly, tears welling in his eyes. Squeezing them tight, he tried to blink them away. He looked at Ruby, his face filled with gratitude.
"Thank you," he said, his chin wobbling. "I was sure he was going to kill me. He threatened to do it when he..."
His voice broke off as sobs racked his body. "Here." Ruby plucked a man-sized tissue from the box at the end of the bed.
"Thanks,"
Thomas sniffed, wiping his nose and eyes.
"I tried to scream, but it built up in my throat because he'd shoved a rag in my mouth. But then his phone rang, and he left me alone in the hotel. When the door opened, I thought he was coming back to kill me. I was in a horror movie, and there was no way out."
"Can you tell us from the beginning what happened?" Downs said, nodding at Ruby to take note. She remembered the voice recorder in her pocket, preferring it to her scribbled notes, which she would struggle to decipher later on. Turning it on, she introduced the people present, along with the time, date, and case number for reference later. Barely pausing for breath, Thomas described his first meeting with Matthew, and the online details that had been given to him by a stranger at the golf club party he recently attended.
"I'm so ashamed," he said. "I've never tried anything like this before, and now my wife has to come to terms with what I've done. I hope she can forgive me."
"When you got to the hotel room, what happened?" Downs said, encouraging him to carry on.
"I'd already had a few drinks for Dutch courage, and to be honest, I was having cold feet."
Thomas picked a thread from the hospital blanket, his words laced with regret.
"Matthew reassured me his discretion, and said I could back out any time I wanted. I've never been unfaithful to my wife. I can't imagine what you must think."
"We're not here to judge," Ruby sighed, wishing he would worry a bit less about what they thought and get on with the description. Thomas nodded, looking a little more reassured.
"Of course, sorry."
He drew in a deep breath before continuing.
"We got to the room, and we kissed a couple of times. I went to the bathroom while he cut us a few lines of coke. Again, it's not something I've tried that often," he said,
throwing them a guilty glance.
"I felt awful afterwards. It's never affected me that way before. Then Matthew started tying me up, and I just presumed it was part of our night. Then he just stopped and turned on the television like I wasn't there. I must have passed out, as there was something else on the television when I came to, and Matthew had eaten a meal. I couldn't believe he'd ordered room service while I was tied up on the bed."
"Can I interrupt you there?" Ruby said, forgetting her promise to Downs to allow him to take the lead. "When Matthew was with you, was he sexually excited?"
"Yes, he had a whopping great erection," Thomas sniffed, "which is why I couldn't understand why he suddenly stopped."
"You were saying that he'd ordered room service?" Downs said, giving Ruby a look before bringing him back to his account. Thomas nodded.
"I asked him what the hell he was doing, but I don't remember his response. I kept blacking out and coming to, missing great big chunks of time. It had to be the drugs. Eventually, he told me that if I didn't shut up, he'd gag me. I tried to get off the bed, but I was tied to the posts."
Ruby frowned. That wasn't the way the victims were displayed in the pictures. She hated to interrupt as Thomas was looking tired, and she knew they had only a little time.
"Did he take any photos?" she said.
"Yes," Thomas replied. "He snapped one with his iPhone when we got to the hotel. I told him I didn't want any pictures taken, but he just laughed it off and said he'd delete it. He took the second one when I was tied up. He'd untied me from the bedposts by this time, but because the rope was around my neck, I was still in no position to move. That's when he got the phone call and left."
Thomas's fingers touched the gauze on his neck as he relived the memory.
"I'm sure I was minutes from death."
Ruby did not argue.
"What about a description?" Downs cut in. "Could you work with a police sketch artist?"
"Yes," Thomas said. "He was about 5'11". Just looked like a regular guy. Average build, brown hair. Nothing special, but he had a way about him, you know? He was very charismatic. Almost commanding."
He paused, pressing a button that lay on the bed by his side. "Are you all right?" Ruby asked, as the colour left his face.
"Just a bit of pain," Thomas said,
his features relaxing as the morphine kicked in. Ruby felt genuine sympathy for the man whose life had just imploded. She knew that this would be the first of many times he would relive each painful memory. But the most accurate information was that gathered directly after the event. Soon the minute details of such a horrific event would begin to fade. As the ward sister slid the door open, it seemed that their time was up. She looked at Downs as if he were the only person in the room.
"The doctor is on his rounds. Come back later when he's had some rest."
"Thanks, love," Downs replied, before turning to Thomas.
"We'll arrange a sketch artist. Have him drop by to see you later on."
Ruby followed him out, feeling hope at last. With a description to follow, and having saved their last victim, their killer was running on borrowed time. Chapter 46. Abby's voice crumbled as she acknowledged her appointment. Her long dark lashes wet with tears, she hunched over her mobile phone. Her size 10 jeans felt loose around her hips as she paced her bedroom, a direct result of the mounting stress that stemmed her appetite and made her feel ill. Sheer panic was guiding her actions, but she found herself pressing the self-destruct button just the same. It would have seemed odd to most people, unless they had been through a trauma of some kind. Abby's life had been one headlong collision after another. She had fooled herself into thinking that she could be happy, just for a little while. She was wrong. Nothing this good could last forever. It was time to accept that she could not have what was granted so easily to others. She was soiled, damaged goods. The flashbacks of her past served as timely reminders, fueled by the constant worrying thoughts bouncing against the walls of her mind. Up until Steve, she had ended relationships just as they began to blossom. She had to get there before they did, to soften the blow. Steve was her constant, her happy ever after. But now, as she stared at the test resting on the side of the bath, she felt sick with fear. A baby. They were going to have a baby. Something she desperately wanted, but never believed she could have. She was always forgetting to take her pill. Was it on purpose? A tiny spark of hope whispered that everything would be okay. She shook her head, dispersing the thought. Nothing good could come into her life without ending in tragedy. What if she had a little girl? What if she was subject to the pain and degradation she had been through? Back and forth, the argument raged inside her. She was doing Steve a favor. The sooner he found out what she was like, the better it would be all around. But Steve was not one to give up, which was why she was making it really easy for him. The acceptance email had pinged into her email inbox, and the timing was impeccable. She had not been able to resist the sight, having been given the invitation by an old friend. For an hour, Abby had bent their ear with drunken ramblings about how her husband was too